Welcome to Pacific Beer Chat. I'm Mike.
I'm Warren.
I'm Steven.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Jason from Big Ridge Brewing.
All right, so this is our second tasting panel with What's Brewing Magazine. So maybe I'll let Dave kind of tell everyone what this tasting panel is going to be and a little bit about where the beers come from and everything.
Hi, I'm Dave from What's Brewing. We have a sponsor for this episode. Is Legacy Liquor Stores provided us with the fine beverages that we're about to review and consume, and for which we're very thankful. Amen.
Well said.
So we have...
Preach.
Just like last time, we have a theme. And in each issue of What's Brewing, which comes out quarterly, we pick a topic, we pick a theme around style of beer. And so in our last episode, it was Goza. This episode, we're doing something... Instead of new and hot style that's just come out and nobody knew about until the last few years, like Goza, we're doing something that people knew about a long time ago. And then it kind of got eclipsed for a while, and now there might be a little bit of a backlash that's bringing it back. And the name of the style is West Coast IPA.
Oh, ever heard of it?
Nope.
Overrated. And so the reason it's called West Coast IPA, well, there's a couple of reasons. One is that this type of, this is a highly hopped beverage. Everybody's familiar. If you have any exposure to craft beer, you're familiar with the concept of hoppy beers. And for a lot of people, in fact, there was a period maybe about from 12 years ago to maybe... 4 or 5 years ago, where for a lot of people, craft beer was kind of synonymous with hoppy beers. For people that were kind of hop averse, they were afraid of bitter beers. They thought of their friends that are drinking craft beers, mainly drinking IPAs, which they may or may not have known what it's called. But people just referred to it as IPA. Well, there was a point right around 2016 in BC that style... or actually a family of styles known as New England IPA, kind of burst onto the scene. And it was thanks to Steamworks, who released probably the first commercially successful hazy IPA in BC, which is Flagship IPA, and won the Beer of the Year at BC Beer Awards October 2016. And so because of that, it got a lot of attention. And the next thing you know, almost every brewer in the province is learning how to make hazy beers.
Yeah, and some are really excelling.
Twin Sales has dominated the market.
Yeah. Superflux, Boombox,
Yeah, Superflux for sure, yeah. Boombox, absolutely.
So that kind of became the new school of IPA. And for the last few years, that's become probably the hottest trend and maybe some of the most expensive canned beers out there. So. Yeah. Yeah, that kind of new school, the boomboxes and the superfluxes, they've driven a lot of attention, a lot of prestige to hazy IPAs, and you know, they're good for them. But what's happened in by the same token is that classic IPAs, which include things like Central City's Red Racer, that came out in the late 2000s, around 2007, 2008, that became... at the time, the hot thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then followed by Fat Tug from Driftwood, and that became probably the sort of go-to staple craft beer in BC.
Very widespread.
Yeah, for a long, long time. That's the one beer that would be craft on tap in all the shitty pubs.
Yep.
It was like that generation's Okanagan Springs Pale Ale. So now, at this point, you'll still find Fat Tug around a lot. But in terms of what's considered cutting edge, you know, 10 years later, we're going to revisit and we're going to find out, are these beers that I've just named, because these two beers are actually in the pool of beers we're going to be reviewing, and we're going to compare with what has happened in this sort of vein of West Coast IPA, because we've got some from breweries like small startup Lightheart Brewing. And so,
so this is a very modern interpretation of the style. They just released this quite recently, within the last month or so, right? So
we're going to find out whether We like what's happening now in West Coast IPA and how it holds up, or how the other older guys hold up against it. But, you know, first thing about it is that, again, there hasn't been a lot of attention for this kind of IPA. People have kind of been seduced by the sweetness and the body and the fun of drinking the juicy, hazy milkshake IPAs. So when we drink these, to some extent, we're going to be, it's a throwback to what we used to drink. So,
perfect.
So, Mike.
When we were young and our backs didn't hurt.
We've got a few choices here. Again, thanks to Legacy Liquor Store. So, we've been supplied with six different beverages that we're going to test out. Now, Mike, should we get started on this?
Let's do it.
Parkside Humans, which. We should qualify, may not actually be intentionally designed as a West Coast IPA, but it when we coordinate with Legacy Liquor to get these beers, one of the realities is sometimes we actually have trouble getting six in stock that are of the exact style we want. And you wouldn't think it would be, you know, that hard, but it actually, every episode, it's actually hard to get six exact vertical beers that match. So this one we're trying might actually be the anomaly, but we'll work into it with this first because it's the lowest alcohol ABV. Okay, so this is Humans IPA for the People. We're going to crack this open.
Real interesting looking label on this thing. It looks like a random scribble, but if you look really closely, you can see faces in the scribbles.
Yeah, it's crazy.
The more you drink this beer, the more you see the faces.
Yeah, I think that's the way it works. Just, the more you hallucinate, the better. Oh, wow.
Oh, that's a bit of a throwback.
You get those big citrusy aromas off there. It does smell juicy, quote unquote juicy.
Yeah.
And it is a bit hazy. It's not super thick like some of the milkshakes, but it is definitely hazy.
It's what I call hazy and not murky.
Right. Yeah. I can see through it, but it takes some effort and I lose all the detail.
Right.
It's translucent.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not opaque.
This is translucent. And, so before you get to hazy, you have cloudy. So this might be called cloudy.
Yeah.
Misty?
Yeah. I find mist in my beer.
I missed it.
Oh.
Ouch. First pun.
Yeah, so that's not super punch in the face with the hops.
Nope, it's right there in the front, but it doesn't just sort of smack you.
Mm-hmm. It's not unpleasant.
I think we're basically working towards the West Coast IPA. We're going to end up at the hoppiest one last.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
That's probably the best way to do it to avoid palate fatigue.
Yes, exactly.
This is pretty nice. It's got a... I was going to say balanced, but it's not quite balanced. There is a malt there to back it up, but it's just slightly to the hoppy side.
Yeah. It's definitely not a big, big, bitter hop bomb that you're used to the old Palate Wrecker days and stuff.
Oh, licking the inside of a grapefruit?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to guess that one of the reasons it's called, it was given this name, and I don't know if it was Vern that named it or who came up, but, you know, I think maybe one of the reasons is that it's called Humans is because it's like sort of every person beer. I think that was the intent, perhaps. Yeah.
Is it just me? I'm getting a little bit of the alcohol warmth.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely heat.
Yeah. A little bit. Yeah. And weirdly enough, I mean, the idea of this being beer for the people and, you know, after, what, a decade or so of drinking hops on in all their glory.
Yeah.
This used to be the sort of thing that would scare me off.
There you go. That's right.
Way back when we were starting and... I was just trying craft beer for the first time. It was all about the malt for me. Hops scared the crap out of me.
Yeah.
Didn't want bitter. Rarely drank an IPA. Now I'm kind of like, could use a little more punch.
Yeah. I think that's typical for everybody's exploration into craft beer. They kind of start safe going through lagers and more malt forward. And then all of a sudden, hops is the big adventure, right?
So. Exactly.
Yeah, it's got sort of that pithiness going on.
Oh, yeah. Definitely that the fruitiness, the citrusy kind of notes.
Yeah.
Everything you'd expect out of a beer like this.
Yeah, definitely.
Without that lactose sweetness.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty decent.
That's not bad. I can definitely drink this.
This would taste really nice out on their patio on a day like today.
I was going to say, it's really hot today. Yeah. This is
petting all the dogs.
It's like 30 plus here, I think, today.
I think the first time I had this beer was at Bee's Craft Beer Lounge, and big fan ever since.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy drinking for this style. I can see how they'd go through a lot of this, probably at Parkside.
They've got a big patio, so.
They sure do.
To your point.
With humans and dogs on it.
Yes, I love the dogs. The dogs more than the humans.
So where did this beer place in the What's Brewing tasting?
Do we want to get to that later?
Well, I'll at least just introduce the idea of what the feature does. So one of the things that we try to accomplish with the quarterly tasting panel feature is that we have a winner each round. So we have a rating system that's loosely based on BJCP score sheet.
Very loosely.
And so that's the BJCP criteria essentially rate beers on a 50 total of 50 points scale, which is weighted so that you have different values for aroma, for appearance, for the palate or mouthfeel, and flavor. And so Beer Judge Certification Program essentially is the, let's say international body, but of course it's American. And so they've come up with
the World Series.
That's right. Toronto Raptors, world champions now, not American. And so they were essentially sort of the body that came up with the idea of how to review beers. Warren, is BJCP certified?
And they was actually designed to judge homebrew and let people know how closely they were adhering to the style that they were attempting to brew. So it doesn't necessarily judge a beer on how awesome it is. It's more about how accurately you're reproducing it.
Yeah.
So it may not really apply to something like what we're doing here.
Well, one of the things about, to your point about the homebrew judging is, as you say, it wasn't invented for the point of saying that your beer is awesome and your beer sucks. Because, as a certified judge, you're told you're not there to tell people that
you're there their to beer lift sucks. People up and give them tips on how to improve.
That's right. So, by the same token, when we're reviewing the beers in What's Brewing, and actually we also we have a second web presence called Beer Me BC, which reviews beers, let's say, on a little bit less strict scale, but still, we have to review BC beers, and the last thing we want to do is, shoot somebody in the groin.
Ouch. Just going straight for it.
Yeah, no doubt.
We want to, maybe give an example of this is maybe what went wrong with the beer. Maybe this sample was skunked or maybe something happened. Yeah. But we're looking at which of these do we think is the best on a given day. Not really looking for the losers as much as we are looking for the winner.
You mean you don't want to say, this beer would taste great on popcorn?
Wow.
Butter.
Wow.
Right.
We've all had a acetyl bomb before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, we're very grateful to... So the breweries that are participating are actually also part of the sponsorship in some way because they're... choosing to be in this program. So, we appreciate all the breweries that are participating.
That's awesome.
And we couldn't do it without them unless we went to the liquor store ourselves and got all this stuff.
Who wants to do all that work?
Yeah, exactly.
So what are we going to do next here, Dave?
Well, I was suggesting maybe after we're done this round, which clearly, folks, Warren was first. His glass is empty. Don't point at Steve.
He was done first.
I might have been.
Maybe. Don't look at me. Flashbacks to the kids' table. I want pie.
Well,
so what are we doing? Wait on Main Street? Or?
Well, we wait for the next one, which I think we should probably do Main Street, I suggest.
Main Street?
We should, and that's the fridge unloading.
Hmm, maybe not. Let's see which one that was.
Beer Hunter.
It's very topical.
I have not played that in a very long time.
We'll be wearing
right.
The next beer.
Shit, it's only Wednesday. It's not Thursday.
Does this one have a dent in it?
Nope, not that one.
Okay, good.
Not that one either.
All right, so this is the Main Street Brewing. I got to put on my glasses so I can see what it says on the label here.
Well, for those of us that are still finishing while you're over there practicing reading, for those of us that are still trying to finish the first beer, what did you guys think of the first beer?
It was pretty damn good.
It's good. It's not a true West Coast IPA to my tastes. It's not bitter enough.
I wouldn't call it a hop bomb, but it was fairly nicely balanced. So yeah. It is an easy drinking version.
Yeah. It's got enough pith and all that kind of stuff going on, just not the bitterness for me.
And to kind of follow up on what Steve's earlier comment was, where this would be something that he would be interested in back in the day. if I was going to introduce someone to that particular style, this is probably where I'd start.
Yeah.
Super approachable, has all the kind of right components and characteristics.
Pretty good choice,
yeah. Yeah, to right. lead them in down the path of their hop adventure.
Yeah, exactly. You get the flavor profile without being just slapped across the face and not knowing what to do with it. Yeah, this would be a great start into hoppy beers or particularly West Coast IPA styles.
Yeah, because starting with the New England IPA is not a great start because it doesn't teach them anything about bitterness at all.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's fair. And so, yeah, we're easing into this. It gets Mike Garson's stamp of approval. It's all pith, no vinegar.
So did that.
It's going to be one of those notes.
Wow. Yes, it is.
Now, Jason, so to your point about, so this would be a good entry beer. So actually it turns out that one of the commenters in Tasting Panel made that comment about Main Street. So let me hand off to you guys to officially crack the Main Street.
The Naked Fox IPA from Main Street.
I didn't know foxes wore pants. More naked fox.
I would point out that my 3-year-old daughter has a book, Why Animals Should Not Wear Clothing, and they specifically address foxes.
Really? Was the fox naked? Or?
Not in the book.
Okay.
So this is interesting. On the back
what
of the can.
Fox say?
Oh, where's my pants?
So this dry, it, on the back of the can, they call this a dry IPA. It says this dry IPA is brewed using a variety of North American and Southern Hemisphere hops. So and then they keep mentioning dryness. So the dryness on the malt side lets the hop shine through. So let's see if it is actually dry.
Looks pretty wet to me.
That's what I was thinking, but that's technical.
This one's got a haze to it, too. Not hazy like a milkshake, but it's definitely not clear.
There's still more here, too, if anyone needs any more.
Okay.
Yeah, again, it's definitely not your super clear filtered beer.
Nope.
But it's a lot clearer than the last one.
Absolutely. And I mean, who knows? Some of that could even be hop haze, right?
From
hop oils. It's got a slightly different aroma. Not exactly the aroma you'd expect from a Northwest style IPA. It's not all grapefruit and all that kind of thing.
It's a little subdued. It definitely is fruity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little grapefruit, but a little kind of nice funky note to it.
Yeah, there's something interesting in there.
Almost getting a little more like melon than I would like citrus and grapefruit and all that.
I'm getting a really nice kind of malt character, like bread.
You can get that malt coming through.
I really like that.
Yeah.
I like balance. I like when I enjoy IPAs, I don't like getting beat in the face with a wet sack of grapefruit. Like, it's just not fun for me.
I prefer more balance too.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like when you're, say, if we were comparing chili, right? You want a little bit of heat, but you don't want to burn your face off.
If you asked me 10 years ago, I wouldn't agree with that.
No, as we all, right? Steve's the one that made the sore back comment, so I'm just kind of riding that way.
Yeah. And so that malt's really coming through in the flavor, too. I'm picking up like that real nutty kind of malt character.
Yeah, wow.
a grainy, malty.
Mm-hmm. This is definitely old school because most IPAs nowadays in the West Coast style are so dry, no malt really at all.
So it doesn't have a ton of sweetness.
No.
There is a sweetness there, but it's more that grain character.
Yeah, it's grain sweetness. It's not a sugary sweetness.
Yeah, that's quite nice. That is pretty darn balanced.
Mm-hmm. When you guys mentioned nuttiness, I'm kind of getting that character too. It's very complex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really nice that the notes are really distinct. It's not muddied at all.
Yeah, but then it's definitely grapefruit and grapefruit pith up and behind there. And there is some bitterness, but it's still not a big
It's still bomb. Subdued, very similar to the humans as far as hop levels.
Yeah. So humans and foxes have about the same bitterness level.
Yeah.
Oh, it's, wow. It's, I learned something.
Okay.
It's more balanced. It's not punching you in the face, right? Mm-hmm. So a good place to start, again, if you're just getting into IPAs and that, this one is nothing to be scared of.
No, yeah, for sure.
No, this would be a really nice starting place. But it does sort of lead you on the idea that there might be more malt character than the style really.
Well, when Red Racer was first putting out their things, their IPA, it was pretty balanced. It had quite a bit of malt.
Fair point. That's
and
true.
I think we'll even see when we pour it in a while. You'll see it in the color. It's going to be darker probably than most of the samples we're going to be trying.
Right. Yeah.
Because it's got more crystal malt in it. So it's going to have more of that malt character.
True.
Toffee, caramel kind of thing, right?
So in the panel, which now I'm talking about the written version. So it turns out that one of the panelists, who's also a regular here on Pacific Beer Chat, which is Mike the Beer Raider, Ansley, so he says, I think this is what I would call an intro to IPA. Mm-hmm. IPA. There's nothing scary about it, but it definitely has enough hops in the profile to push it over the pale ale line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And hit me with that. So... You know, this is, and then the other fellow that's on the panel a lot, so that's Carnell. He's not here tonight, couldn't make it, but he was talking about fruit rindy flavors, and so this is something that you'll be able to read if you go to www.whatsbrewing.ca, and you just look up the latest issue of the magazine. It's free online. It's a digital magazine as well as... It's in a number of tasting rooms around British Columbia. And you can see it's right in the middle of the magazine what people are saying about this.
And the fall edition will be out by the time you hear this podcast.
Yes, definitely, yeah.
Yep. So the one thing that Carnell said, though, that we're not going to be able to answer is Naked Fox, what does that even mean?
I'm wondering the same thing.
I'm envisioning a fox that's lost its fur.
Could be, yep.
That's you know, like kind of like those cats with
little
fur.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Okay.
Well, he's got a nice big bling necklace on there, too, so.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I'd be interested to talk to Main Street and kind of get the method behind the madness.
The story?
Yeah. That's, to me, as a brewer trying to come up with names, it's always a fun story, right?
Yeah.
Using
okay, we're gonna use fox. We want an animal. What can we say?
Let's make him naked. Yeah.
I absolutely think that there's a name generator to make beers.
There is. I've used them.
Okay.
Not for professional beers or anything like that, but just for fun.
Yeah,
they're out there.
There has to be because it's the same thing in internet domain names. You're trying to think of the name of a company.
Right.
Press the button. Watch the wheel spin. I'm sure Naked Fox would be something that would come out of something.
I mean,
like
I've
that.
Started three websites now, and none of them have been taken my ideas. So
nice.
I've been lucky.
Yes,
very lucky.
So for the progression that we're on, do you guys agree this is getting closer? We're on a baby
those were,
steps.
Those were two good ones to start with.
Yeah.
But we're getting closer towards West Coast because that's kind of our journey.
Yeah. It's a bit of a sidestep, but a sidestep up.
I'm thinking Fat Tug is probably going to be the last one we try, right?
Yeah.
I would say, personally, my thinking would be the... Red Racer.
The two of them. That'll be last. So then next would be the 33 Acres and Lightheart.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess if we were going by, so why don't we look at what the ABV is and the IBUs
on this one?
So I think I've got this information right here.
This one's 6.8%, I believe.
And just for the hell of it, so let's see what they put for IBU. So the ones we drank so far, Parkside Humans was believe it or not, only 30 IBU.
Wow.
But then that goes along with kind of the
calculated,
the idea of maybe it wasn't really West Coast style. This one, second one we're doing, is the Main Street Naked Fox clocking in at 55 IBU. Mm-hmm. And so if our objective was to go up in IBU scale, we're doing it correctly because all of the rest are closer to 80. So
perfect.
There's
whole West Coast.
Yeah.
The next lowest one, in fact, is 70 IBU, which is the 33 acres of Nirvana.
All right. Why don't we go there then?
Sounds great.
That sounds reasonable.
Keep telling the rest if you want.
All right. Well, I mean, for those that haven't drank with me before, which I assume is the bulk of your listening audience, I'm usually the one with beer left while everyone is moving on. And this happens at Jason's Brewmaster dinners as well.
Yeah.
I'm like, why are they bringing out more beer? I'm not done.
Because everybody else is done.
Everybody else is waiting. So
yeah, having you and Dave out at the last one, and you're going, okay, what's the next course? And you're kind of slapping the table, and Dave's kind of really just taking his time, cutting whatever he's
both
cutting.
Extremes side by side.
It was awesome. It was awesome to watch.
Too funny. But yeah, so you're talking about IBUs, and I mean, at the end of the day, I think they're probably talking about measured, or not measured, but calculated IBUs, so that's, you know, kind of what their recipe's indicating the IBUs should be. Who knows, maybe they have measured it in the lab, and that's what they're going on, but I mean, IBUs are very deceptive, I guess you could say. It's not the end-all, be-all. The balance of the malt and the sweetness is going to affect the bitterness. There's more factors than just IBUs that will affect how hoppy a beer tastes.
Yeah, Steve, do you agree? I mean, I think for the first one, you would definitely, when you're looking at something that's a bit more hazy, or anything that, for instance, you can throw all the hops you want into a lot of New England styles, into a milkshake IPA, and you're just never going to get the, you know, the sort of the bitterness attack that you're used to with IPAs classically, right?
No, of course. It all depends on type, on boil, on steep, all the timings. There so many factors go into how actually bitter I'm going to perceive something versus what I calculate.
What the number is.
Yeah.
And, you know, batch to batch, who knows? But
This 33 acres is creeping up in the alcohol department, too. Ooh. This is a 7%er.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it tends to go hand-in-hand in this sample. So, again, the first one we did actually had the lowest ABV, which was 6.3, which is still, a reasonably healthy ABV, but that was the puppy in the group. And so there, when we get up to, let's say, Fat Tug, so that's 7%, and that's going to be an 80 IBU, as is Red Racer, also 80. So those are kind of the big daddies.
This one's got a little different aroma. A little more like spicy herbal kind of thing going on, not quite as citrusy. But you can smell it. You can smell the hops. You can tell there's some bitterness in there. And this one is clear as a bell. I mean, this thing is
brilliant,
right?
Super, super bright.
Nice coppery too.
It's a decent color. Yeah, what's that? Like a deep amber, light, like a golden.
And folks, when Jason said brilliant, he wasn't actually talking about Warren.
No. He was talking about how brilliant the beer was.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it was brilliant. I'm getting some fun tropical pineapple-y notes on the nose too.
Yes, definitely pineapple.
I was going to say papaya, but I think you nailed it with pineapple.
It's nice tropical stuff,
which is a little unusual for the style.
More new school West Coast IPA.
The old school was a lot more citrusy based, and this is definitely more tropical pineapple. So this is sort of a bridging the gap between the old and the new.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that. It's kind of like a hybrid fusion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I dig it.
It smells fantastic.
Oh, I can live in the nose. The foam on that, too, on the pour.
It's ripping that beautiful glass. Head.
Nice lacing.
Top shelf.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Oh, that is really, really nice. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Okay, I'm going so this on one, buying some of these.
The malt's just a little more subdued in this one, but it's there. It's still noticeable. Malty. The hops are a little more, right? So you're getting that gap's getting a little bigger, but it's still there.
Yeah, it's still not punchy in the face.
Nope.
But.
No, but they did the nice fruity hop without being super juicy, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Has a smoother mouthfeel, I
think. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm interpreting. And that's, I think, what's giving it that kind of malt note. And yet the hop character, that smoothness, allows that hop to kind of not necessarily jump out at you, but be present.
There's a lot of a lot of complexity, and it is fairly balanced for the style. Really.
The more I sip, too, the more grapefruit I'm actually getting on the flavor. There's none on the nose, really, but on the flavor, there's definitely a bunch of grapefruit.
Yeah, for sure.
So the flavor is far more West Coast than the nose is.
Right, that's interesting.
Which is fun, because, I mean, it's totally different beer on the nose and the taste.
Two different fruits.
Yeah.
It's really nice. I mean, it finishes nice and bitter and kind of lingers there.
A little bit of like without
being
there.
Without being unpleasant, without being too much.
Mm-hmm.
I like this a lot.
It's interesting for me to, because as I was mentioning, we have written submissions, and one of the panelists is Warren, and he's sitting right here at giving now his oral submission.
Yes.
And I'm checking to see if it matches with the...
Probably not. Of course. Different days, different mood.
Yeah. No, actually, it does.
Different outfit.
You're don't worry. He's wearing
pants today. before he's in his underwear, right?
Probably.
I'm not here to embarrass you, Warren. You are actually doing really well.
Actually, that's what the rest of us are for.
Yeah. Don't need to waste time on that. It's well handled. So,
where's Carnell when you need him, right?
Right.
Well,
what are beats?
The good news is that we've got his too. So, what Warren said about this is we got citrus flavors without being too bitter, slightly hoppy, close to balanced.
Mm-hmm.
Carnell, he said crisp, bitter, piney, and grapefruity. This beer had all the key components of a great West Coast IPA. So, even though he couldn't make it tonight, I can read his score out for him.
Yes.
And then Mike A., he said, 33 acres of Nirvana, more like 33 acres of Yum Town. I would give this beer to anyone
Yum Town
that is new to IPAs. So he thinks this is actually a great one to give also, again, to somebody that's learning about IPA, wants to start learning about the West Coast style.
Are hearing that 33 acres? You need to make 33 acres of Yum Town.
Yeah. Coming up at the experimental.
Yeah.
I'd like to try the
double Yum Town. I don't know.
Double Yum Town.
The thing I really like about this beer, though, is I can picture myself having multiples of this one.
Yes.
No problem.
I think that's, to me, what I always thought the West Coast IPA was, is you always have more than one. You weren't going to do one and done. And you
couldn't have anything else because the old school West Coast IPAs were so bitter you couldn't taste anything else after.
Yeah, hey, that's a good point.
You're kind of stuck drinking them for the rest of the night,
I mean, there's different drinking environments. And Beer Festival, which we're all familiar with, where you're doing different kinds, you usually leave those ones till toward the end, right? Yeah.
If you're smart.
Reason.
Yeah, or you walk away going, and you facepalm yourself going, oh, I didn't get the IPA because I got too busy doing all these other things.
Oh, I better go get a pastry stout to get rid of the bitterness.
Yeah. Interesting, now
it's
you can actually get
stout.
pastry stout.
Yes. Jeez. They're wonderful.
Yeah.
Warren hates them.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't understand that one for you.
No.
Like, I like pastry. I like the pastry stouts. I did not call that one for you, Mike.
I don't want the pastry in my stout. I'd like it beside it. You can pair them.
Are you kidding? I want it to look like a damn Caesar. I want a big glass with an eclair sticking out.
Yeah, you dip it.
I was just thinking about picturing like a Tim Hortons Long John.
Yeah, right? Just dunk it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a different episode, though.
Big time. We'll do that one in the winter.
We should, yeah.
Pastry stone.
That gives me time.
Cocoa Pebbles, here we go.
Yeah, no doubt.
Wow. So, yeah, if I remember correctly, I think this 33 acres of Nirvana was the one that I really liked the best out of the six when I did the panel a couple weeks ago for the magazine. I think it was my preference, but I think I scored another one similarly, but
Yeah. Well, actually, I think this might be the first 33 Acres beer on the podcast, too. So.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Crazy.
It happens sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, 33 Acres.
It's a good one.
There is almost a couple hundred breweries now in the province. So.
Yeah. But we got good news for 33 Acres, if they're listening. So you are the lucky winner of the What's Brewing Tasting Panel Fall 2019.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Yay. You got the high score. So our version of this, instead of 50 points, we score out of 30. It's essentially the same kind of weighted concept. But in our written submissions, it goes out of 30. And they scored 25 out of 30, which... may not sound like much, but that's actually a pretty good score.
Is it because you couldn't afford the other 20 points?
That's right.
Well, you never score a 10 out of 10 in a category, because what if there's one better? You got to leave a point or two
for
movement.
But the scale being out of 50 and then the scale being out of 30, that was what I was worried about.
You have to exercise your Spinal Tap card and go.
Well, Dave's only got 30 fingers and toes.
So. Okay.
Oh, that's what it was. Right. Yeah. That's
all right. 20 of them his own.
That's why I usually wear socks, folks. So, well, Warren, actually, you scored a 26 out of 30. And, by the way, so did Carnell. And, actually, Julia Hanlon of Steamworks, head brewer there, gave this a really good rating as well.
Nice.
That's because it's a darn good beer.
Mm-hmm.
It is, yes.
If you haven't never tried the 33 Acres, like I hadn't tried this one, the IPA, and I was very pleasantly surprised. I thought it was fantastic, and it wasn't necessarily something that I thought was in their wheelhouse. Usually they're doing, you know, more classic kind of styles and, you know, things that are a little easier to drink.
Right.
But I thought they did a killer job with it.
That really was fantastic. I'm not surprised that one won. I'm not having tasted it the last few beers, of course. But.
Well, and the thing is, I guess it was deliberate, right? They have the benefit of hindsight that they can play around with it, and that's why you got that interesting aroma. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure they're well aware of all the experiences around the beer, and that was not boring. You know?
Really? Absolutely not.
So I guess when we get to the next one, I suggest it would be the Light Heart. Because that one will be, if we're moving up the IBU scale, mm-hmm. will be the next one.
Perfect.
Also, you know, it's kind of fun because it's going to be another younger brewery, and even younger than 33 Acres, younger than Parkside.
So young, they don't even have a location.
Yeah, it's they're brewing young. Out of Moody Ales. They got their own tanks there.
Gypsy Brewers, I think they bought a tank at Moody. Yeah. From what I understand, they are actively looking for a location,
situation.
Though. Yes.
Yeah. I got to meet these guys at the Okanagan Festival this past April, and they were putting
Nathaniel's a fantastic guy.
Yeah, I just
super nice guy.
Had a great
knows
time.
His stuff.
Yeah.
And I've tried a couple of his other beers that he released out of Moody Ales, and they were fantastic too. He did that lemon sour that was really nice.
I feel bad. I actually haven't had any of the beers out of Moody yet. I haven't been to Brewers Row that much lately, so. Need to get back down there and try some of his beers, because I haven't had many since he left Callister there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, he's been busy over the last few months, at least at Moody.
Yeah.
And then there's been several releases.
Yeah, I had some up at the Festive Ale, but he was brewing it, I think, at Moody, but not in his own tanks yet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whatever.
It's been difficult for him.
Oh, yeah.
So I hope they get their location secured soon and start working towards an actual brewery, because I'm sure that would make him much happier, and that would mean he'd make better beer.
Oh, is that right? Is that when you make beer?
When the brewer's happy, the beer turns out
the
better.
The beer sings.
It's true.
It has love in it.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Not too much, I hope.
Yeah, well, got to put in good energy.
This is a G-rated podcast, Mark.
No, it's not.
Not that kind of love. Animals.
How much love is this?
All right. When it comes down to an artisanal, you know, craft product, it's all about the art that's going into it from the artist. It's coming from the heart. If it's not coming from the heart, then it's, you know,
would
it's just another
artist?
Industrial product.
Huh. He is the hardest.
That's just saying. When someone cares artist. About what they're doing, you can tell.
Yeah.
He is heartist. You are heartist. Warren, you are hardest.
Alrighty.
I love you, Warren. You are hardest.
He is not hard. He is not harder. He is hardest.
You can edit that out, Cam.
No, or not. Or not. All right. This is the Beer Hunter can, too. This is the one.
Uh-oh. This is the one that fell on the ground.
Now I know why like Mike's being timid. Yeah. With the next pour.
That's why I'm opening this can and
very
not other people.
Slowly.
This is
all
a,
right. No
this
beer
is
hunter.
Super
we're good.
Simple design.
Like, yeah, I like the label. It's distinctive. You know who it's from. You know what it's about.
If you don't look closely, you expect it to be four leaf clovers because it's green on green. But
yeah, I almost expect like a shamrock clovers. Thing yeah. going on. But yeah. it, like there are, I think, what one
are those
two,
hearts
three,
in the
four.
Back?
They're hearts. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They're like eight words on the entire label.
Yeah. So you
I'd
know
like
what
to call
it
out,
is. You know that it's light heart. You know that it's an IPA, and I love. Of labels that are easy to read.
I want
to
call the label out though because the hearts are actually the dark green, not light.
Right.
Yeah. Light heart.
Yeah.
On.
Oh, they oh, should be inversed.
Geez. Cheeky.
It should be inversed.
Yes. Wow. Yes. I don't know, man.
Nathaniel.
Oh, man. Look at the freaking head on this thing.
Yeah. Jesus. That's pretty deluxe looking.
Oh, I got to use that. Deluxe froth.
No. You passed this the wrong way, didn't you?
Okay. No, did I?
Everybody
sorry.
Got some?
Yeah.
Good.
Yep. Okay. We're good.
I've got there's two I've got here. Too wide a bowl here to get and probably too slow a pour to get what you got there, Steve. But
yeah.
I was a little less delicate than I probably should have been.
No, I got a decent head on mine though too. I mean it looks nice. It's got some legs. It looks like there's some lace.
Yeah.
This one's not quite as clear as the last one.
It's not no, crystal clear, no.
I think it's even
it's got
less,
a bit of haze.
I think it's less clear than the first two.
It's yeah, a little darker so, yeah. in color too.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Sure is.
So there's
is,
some specialty
I think
malt
it's,
in here.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
It's not too dark in any no, way, but that's, this is more of I almost say it's like orange. You
yeah,
know, like a like almost it's not getting towards copper in any way,
like
but
burnt orange,
like a deep like amber or something. I don't know. It's a little darker.
Well, I'm getting once I get past the aroma and actually drink it, I'm getting some like sweetness that it's kind of like caramel, to be honest.
Yeah,
in here.
That's going to be the specialty meal.
The nose is lots of citrus and stuff, though.
Yeah, I get kind of
almost
like dried
citrus.
Yeah, dried orange.
Yeah, you I'm know. Getting citrus notes, but I'm also getting that sort of fresh, like a hop cone kind of aroma,
yeah.
too. Like sort of spicy.
It reminds me of like if I
yeah, I was going to say like a cloved orange
yes.
or like a cinnamon.
Yeah,
cinnamon,
yeah. yeah. Like so there's a spicy component.
But then like orange candy.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, wow. That smells fantastic.
Mm.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. You can have such a different experience on aroma than you get on
yeah.
flavor.
Whoa.
Mm. Although it's still quite...
There's quite a bit of sweetness.
Quite a bit of sweetness. It's yeah. lots of... Yeah.
Real fruity.
Lots of fruit.
Almost it's like dried fruit.
And, yeah.
That is sweeter than I was expecting.
Definitely citrusy.
Yeah.
yeah. So basically not attenuated as
yeah, this
much
one's sweeter than most of the other ones
yeah.
we've
definitely.
Tried.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And it still has that nice kind of, it reminds me of like, not candy grapefruit, but it's got that kind of ruby grapefruit. When
yeah.
you're a kid and you put like a touch of sugar on it.
Yeah.
You sprinkle
yeah.
some brown sugar
you nailed
on
it. That,
yeah.
That's what it reminds you
yeah,
of.
Yeah. For sure.
And
little
that's
bit, yeah.
a good memory. So yeah. if it, to me, when I'm having beer and it reminds me of something like that, that's
yeah.
a good thing. That means you got
yeah.
components in play.
The little maraschino cherry half in the middle there.
Well, okay. Well, it wasn't that cool.
I didn't see there.
That's when you go to the restaurant and get your grapefruit half.
Yeah, light hop, well done.
Yeah, I like this though. Yeah,
yeah, it's pretty. You get a lot of bitterness in the finish.
Yeah,
but it's got that huge maltiness to try and you know back it up.
And
right?
It's got again that resin.
So it's
kind of
still trying
going
to keep
on.
It somewhat balanced
and not yeah. doughy.
Right.
It's got a good mm-hmm. body to it as well. Mm-hmm. A little more rounded, so it allows
silky.
All that. Thing. Yeah, a little smoother. It allows all that showcasing to come forward. And it grips
wow.
the glass super nice, too. I always dig
yeah.
that.
Yeah, that's
especially,
nice. Really nice lacing.
Especially when, with IPA, because the amount of hops going into that. I always, you know, under the understanding that it's going to give that lacing and that grip on that glass. And if you can tell if it has a strong hop presence, if it's able to do that. And all the beers that I've sampled so far tonight, that all of them have that, which is great.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah, that's there's nothing wrong with this one.
They can keep making this for sure.
Mm-hmm. But this sort of
just a little tad on the sweet side
this
for me, but
still follow into a West Coast IPA.
I would say even more so because yeah. you know, 10, 12 years ago or whatever, typically they were a little darker color, maybe
yeah.
even darker than this, And that's because of the crystal malts that are being used, because the original recipes for this style were based on the English IPAs.
Yeah.
And all we did was replace the hops and the yeast. So we cranked up the hops and used local ones like Cascade, Centennial, Chinook, that kind of stuff. And we switched over to the American ale yeast, right? So SO5 or whatever you want to call it, Chico ale yeast or whatever. So you use that, so you get that nice clean finish with just a bit of fruitiness. You crank the heck out of the Northwest hops, so you get the citrus and all that. And they still use the same malt bill as the English IPAs, which have a lot of crystal, sometimes even C120, usually C60, sometimes C30. These days, probably closer to C15. But back in the day, that's what it was about.
Yeah.
So I'd say this is almost more of a throwback than anything we've had so far.
And I'm just brought up the BJCP for American IPA, and just appearance-wise, just saying should be clear, although unfiltered dry hop versions may be a bit hazy. So I
right.
mean, seeing a little
hazy
translucency
is
all to spec. So
yeah.
And besides that, BJCP, the appearance is only 3 points, so it's not that important.
This is
so what if it's purple?
This
it
is
doesn't
the
matter.
First one to actually bill itself as a West Coast IPA. All the previous ones have been just IPA.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is the first one to deliberately be going to style.
In other words,
which
is
interesting
Nathaniel,
for a brand new brewery, because they're making a style that's not
doing
really that popular right now.
The throwback, and I think Nathaniel knows that. Because of the fact that New England IPA has been so dominant in terms of, getting all
why
the
would you want to
headlines
compete with that when everybody's got one?
You can expect that there's going to be a swing back at some point, and people are going to go, "Oh, I miss, why are we drinking these? I want to go back to this."
And there's a solid nostalgia component to this beer. Like I can sit here and go, "Yeah, 10 years ago, this I could think of drinking this."
Well, one of the things that Warren just actually. I think both Jason and Warren might have kind of touched on, there's this, for at least one of the reviewers in writing, reminded them of English IPA. So,
yeah.
That's actually Mike A. So,
okay.
The Beer Raider, he said, "I don't know if I would call this a West Coast IPA. I got a smooch of earthy hops and a firm handshake of malts. In my opinion, it leans more towards an English style IPA."
It's not quite balanced enough for English. I think we'd have to knock the hops down a little bit more.
It might be like trending that way.
Yeah,
but definitely,
for sure.
The English weren't drinking this. But I have to give him points for the line about the firm handshake of malts.
I'm just thinking his wife better be checking in on him a little bit there.
It's only a handshake so far.
Yeah.
There was a smooch there.
There was, right? I know, a smooch of hops.
One thing I'm noticing as I drink more of this, though, is I know it's sweet to the flavor, but it's also drying my mouth out.
Mm. That's because it finishes very hoppy and bitter, right?
Exactly. But that's getting back to more of that West Coast IPA.
Yeah.
It's finishing drying my mouth out.
And that makes you want to sip it again.
Yeah, exactly. So I think this is the first one that's kind of doing that for my mouth, which we're going in the right direction.
Yeah.
In other words, what you're saying is that it's not highly attenuated, all the way that you might have expected.
Well, I think there's some unfermentables in there.
But unlike, let's say, something like a porter or stout, it's not leaving you with, sugars the same way that you're getting sweetness, but you're
the sweetness is at the beginning, and then by the time you get halfway through, the hops take over.
Mm. And it just sort of dries out your mouth, yeah.
Yeah. Then you have to sip it again, and then the cycle starts all over.
And you got
to
order another one.
It's lovely.
That's exactly why they make beer, is to make you want to eat salty food, and that's why they sell you salty food, to make you drink beer.
Yes.
Free pretzels and peanuts. It's a marketing ploy.
It is.
Don't eat them.
Or do.
There goes my waistline.
Pacific Beer Chat does not advocate eating food.
Yeah, we do.
Okay, I've been overruled.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you haven't tried any Lightheart beers, go out and get them. They're darn decent beers. And if you're down on Brewer's Row, look for them at Moody Ales and try them.
Or go to the liquor store, Legacy Liquor Store, and pick some up.
Sure.
Yeah, it would be best not to mention all the other liquor stores in town at this particular moment.
Yeah.
What other liquor stores? Are there any others?
Well, they're not nearly as big with it, not nearly as extensive a selection.
Legacy has to have one of the best selections in BC, hands down. Come on. Their whiskey section alone is unbelievably impressive.
Yeah.
Which we'll find out when Mike invents a whiskey podcast.
Oh, hey, you want to bring a bunch of whiskeys on the show? We'll do a whiskey episode. We'll do it.
Can we do an Indian whiskey night, please?
Me and Warren have done some gins already on the show.
That's right. We did a gin show. So, yeah.
Well, we did some Central City stuff, which included two versions of Queensborough.
I was actually just going to say, you could have all flavored, like highball, and
little sparkling water drinks and stuff.
I think we should maybe talk to Tariq from Yale Town.
Yeah,
you hear that, Tariq?
He's got a pretty decent gin. Yeah, so do those other guys down in Yeast Van there, the Odd Society.
We should probably just reach out and see if they got a really nice gin. Spirits too.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
or head down to one of the tasting rooms and do some cocktails.
I feel like that one meme where the bearded guy is like, "I don't always drink beer, but when I do, I drink Tariq's hopped gin." I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
If you're gonna talk gin as well, I just a little bit of shout out. Talk to Roots and Wings.
They got some nice products too.
Warren and I went there when they were first opening, and we had a hoot when we were there.
That coffee infused one was fantastic.
Top shelf, yeah. Oh. So,
We
need to get back out there and see what they're up to.
I agree.
Never been. So
another Valley shout out.
Yeah, no doubt.
Very small producer, and everything they use in their products is grown on site.
Wow.
So it's basically a farmhouse distillery.
And Rebecca's a phenomenal distiller, too.
They make really nice stuff. It's amazing.
Can we get that name again?
Roots and Wings.
Okay.
Look for it.
I like Roots and I like Wings.
They're in the middle. They're in the middle of farm country. Like, there's nothing around.
It's worth the jaunt.
It is. Absolutely. Yeah. It's not too far away from civilization.
Nice.
Good 10 minutes.
Yet another farming Rebecca.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Apparently.
I wonder if they've met.
I'm sure they have.
Interesting.
All right. Well, that's a really good beer. I'm
pretty decent.
I'm not surprised. Nathaniel's a great brewer.
Yeah, I don't think I've had too many. I don't think I've had any beers from him that weren't pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah.
All right. So
I don't even think I've had ones from him that were mediocre. Like, yeah, they're all pretty good or great. Right.
Definitely. Yeah.
I'm sure the question is going to arise now. Where do we go next? And because now we've got a fork in the road. So
we're halfway through.
We're two-thirds way through because, see what, 4 into 6? But anyway, so...
Keep up, Warren.
Warren is...
Well, we're 3 in, so we're halfway through now.
I shouldn't talk because Warren probably could drank 5 in the time I was at 2. But he's having to wait and hold back, so I don't blame him.
Yeah, that's fine.
So... we have the final two, and actually they're the oldest two, as we discussed at the beginning of the podcast. So we've got the two classics from this millennium anyway, in IPA in BC. And so now we have to decide, and since there's 5 of us, we could have a democratic decision successfully. we have to decide which is going to be the second last.
A toughie.
Which is our next beer?
Are they reported to be the same IBU?
They are the same IBU. They're 80 IBUs.
80, eh?
So, and folks, in case you forgot who we're talking about.
I guess we should start with the newest of the two, then.
Oh, the newest of the two. That's a good way of putting it.
Which is hard to pick because they're both old.
They're both old, but one of them's definitely newer.
Driftwood's definitely newer.
Yeah.
That's really? Correct.
Oh, yeah, and, by years.
Yeah. Not many.
Not many,
we're talking
a few.
About two.
Yeah,
and that's enough because Driftwood actually, kind of came along and nudged. I would say you guys would probably agree, as we said before, Central City aside a little bit because they became sort of the de facto craft beer for a lot of hospitality that didn't have a lot of craft beer, but they needed something for the people that were annoying them.
I don't know how it got so widespread so quickly. They must have had an amazing salesperson or marketing person working at the time.
I remember working at a liquor store.
Yeah.
That way I can't mention, obviously.
A cold beer and wine?
Yeah. No, not quite. And the rep we had for Driftwood, she was fantastic.
Yeah.
So, and it wasn't just... trying to move product.
It's not just the beer; experience. It was about the people you at the time to get that
legitimately.
Widespread.
Yeah.
Presenting the product.
It was all about connecting the dots. I think that's the term she used. So if she is a representation of their sales team, then it of course then no wonder.
Yeah,
and well earned.
This is the kind of investigative journalism that I expect on Pacific Beer Chat. Deeply connected, experienced. Wow, that's good reporting. Because let's face it,
cut in the mail.
Let's talk to him. Oh, no, I'm just talking. I'm just getting the. I'm just representing your worth.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, when I worked at a liquor store, the store I worked at didn't know what craft beer was. Oh. So.
Did your store have reps? Yelch. I mean, I remember that place.
Oh God. They probably had reps, but they were from Molson, Labatt.
Yeah. Damn.
All right. Yeah, it was a shithole.
I mean, I'll give them their convenience.
Yeah, they sort of.
Okay, well, why don't you go grab the fat tugs there? We'll do those next.
Say what?
Is that what we're well, gonna do fat tugs?
Yeah. Apparently, the Democratic vote is now being
overruled.
It is something.
I was gonna vote for fat tug. Next.
We'll finish up on the oldest and the most.
What were you
going to
vote for, Steve?
I was going to vote for fat tug, then Red Racer.
Yeah.
You know what? All five of us were then.
We were there.
So. Apparently, we're kindred spirits that don't really need the formality of.
That's right.
And there's something I get a kick out of, and I explain this to people, especially with in a former life, I did search engine marketing, and how word fame is so important. So, say for example, if all five of us, you know, after today, it's like, oh, we go down to the pub. Hey, what did you guys do after you recorded your podcast? Oh, we just went down, had a couple fat tugs. Yeah. Now, in certain other industries, that sounds absolutely terrible. Right? If you were to say that 15, 20 years ago, it's like, oh, yeah. Jeez, man, it's only Wednesday. Calm down.
Jason,
right?
You want to come over and have a fat tug?
Exactly. You said that 20 years ago, people would lose their minds. You say that now, it's like, really? That's all you got? You know, you're going to coffee up a fat tug?
Well, there definitely is a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek situation going on with the naming.
Absolutely.
They may not get away with that same naming in today's environment, but I think it's so established that you don't think twice about it, right?
What are you talking about? It has a tugboat on the...
It does.
I really
like the old label
the
better
the
than the new one, by
at,
the way.
The point I'm driving at, as soon as in the beer world, the BC craft beer world, we say fat tug, we know we're talking about Driftwood IPA.
Right.
And so, again, that's another shout out to the sales team and the marketing
it's
of
Driftwood. It's synonymous.
You nailed it. So... Maybe this might be a topic for later. It would be interesting what other beers have that kind of word thing.
Yeah.
Wow. This smells really nice.
Good
that
point.
Does.
Oh, man, that takes me back.
I'm smelling that malt, that caramely sweetness. I'm also smelling like floral hops along with the citrus.
Yeah, there's a little bergamot. There's a little like powdered sugar. A little
right?
First bergamot.
I spent a lot of time with this beer.
What is bergamot? Thank you.
It's a small flower. It's what gives Earl Grey its flavor.
Oh, okay. Well, I still like the beer, and I don't like Earl Grey, so perfect.
Almost smells like a honeysuckle.
I'll tell you what,
flower.
I love Earl Grey in beer, and I don't even drink tea.
Yeah, well, Tariq used to make a really nice a tea-based IPA. Yeah.
I've been trying to find that recipe.
Oh, it's delicious.
Okay,
if you can find it, make it happen.
Okay.
Oh,
hear that, Tariq?
One of my favorites.
You got to help me out, man.
Yeah.
Make it so.
It was a Darjeeling IPA. And Darjeeling is the champagne of tea, right?
Of course. No. Who
is that again? Who's that?
I guess you Tariq. Can't make a beer out of that, then.
I could. Yeah, right. Darjeeling.
The champagne of tea?
You have to have cork and gauge.
Yeah, so this,
champagne of beer?
This beer smells like a West Coast IPA,
yes.
Except it also has that floral component, so it's a little more complex than just citrus, just grapefruit. There's a little more going on in there.
I get orange blossom, and I always have.
For sure.
You know, and to me, yes, you could, on one hand, you could say, that's a distinctive English character. I just, for this one, I don't think it's out of character.
It's got that malt backbone. This one's a little lighter in color, so not as much of the crystal malt.
And the clarity is always great.
The clarity is fantastic. Yeah.
We did say it's 7%, right?
Yeah. 7, yeah.
I'm almost thinking that the aroma is a little lighter on this can than it is on tap.
You could be right.
Here's the thing. I mean, this is what you're used to hearing about Fat Tug over the last 5 years. And this is... so now, you know, let's have some authenticity here. Is there anybody here who honestly could say that they've never thought or heard somebody else say over the last 5 years, Fat Tug isn't what it used to be? it's changed.
Yeah.
The beers do change over time.
They do. Yeah. I've even noticed the Red Racer has changed occasionally because they just simply couldn't get the hops that they usually use. Yeah. So they had to substitute something else. And I actually picked it out one day. This is probably about 4 or 5 years ago, but I was sitting up at the Red Racer pub in Surrey.
In Bridgeview?
And, yeah. No, not Bridgeview. The one up at the top of the hill. The original.
Yeah, the old brew pub.
And I was sitting there, and I was drinking a pint of the Red Racer IPA. And I'm thinking to myself, this is not quite what it usually is. This is a little different. It's just slightly not the same. Mm-hmm. And Gary came walking out of the brewery to get a glass of water. Or
poor him,
he was
bad
doing.
Timing.
Yeah, and I called him over and I said something. I said to him, "What's going on here? It's not quite the same." And he goes, "Oh no, it's all the same. It's all good, kind of thing, right?" And I said, "Well, I said it's not bad or anything. It's just slightly different. It's not what I'm used to." And he said, "Oh well." And then he leaned in and he said, "Actually, we couldn't get one of the hops. We had to swap something out. I'm surprised you picked it up."
Well, Gary, although we know you're not listening to the podcast, you just got busted.
Yeah.
So the reality is that even year to year, the same hops from the same producer are going to change. They're not going to have the same characteristics identical. They're going to change depending on the weather and everything, right? Mm-hmm. So even the malt hop, the crops are going to be different year to year. So trying to reproduce a recipe so the beer always tastes the same year to year is like trying to hit a moving target. It's really difficult. And that's why big companies like Budweiser spend a ton of money sending people all over the world to all their breweries trying to make sure their beer tastes the same everywhere they go.
They are amazing at it. I won't drink their stuff, but they're amazing at it.
They're like Denny's. You go to any Denny's and you're guaranteed to get the same shitty meal, right?
That's what you're paying for, and that's what you expect.
I got exactly what the last Denny's gave me.
That's
a pile of slop.
So, you know, just the reality of it is that, you know, here the lesson is about Central City. First of all, we're foreshadowing because we're going to be on to them next.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that little anecdote about Gary shows that even a guy who's at some point being considered Canada's best brewer better not mess with any member of the Pacific Beer Chat podcast, because they will pick out...
Warren will pick it out. Yeah,
hold on. Let's just slow down here.
There was a time a few years back when I drank a lot of Red Racer IPA, and I got to know it really well.
You had me at drank a lot.
That Red Racer one does actually taste different now, for sure. Like, I can taste
it's changed over the years, for
sure.
It's
definitely changed a lot over the years, yeah.
I think about 2 years ago, there was probably a major reiteration.
Especially because they went from a small little brew pub system to a massive production system.
Well, just changing the equipment would have changed the flavor of the beer.
But let's get back to the Fat Tug first.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Yeah, we're supposed to be trashing Fat Tug.
Warren, I'm going to tug you back over to this one.
All right. Yeah. I'll just look the other way.
At the end of the day, this is a freaking classic Northwest style.
And we're back to talking about Fat Tug.
It's a classic. If you want to try the epitome of this style, I guess, try the Fat Tug. I mean, it hasn't changed a lot in years.
And I think we've all been there where we're in the middle of some rinky-dink brew pub in the middle of podunk nowhere, and you look at their beer list, and it's like, oh, God.
Garbage. Trash. Oh, Fat Tug.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Something I know.
Yeah.
I just hope they've cleaned their beer lines.
That's exactly it.
And you're... Warren's cringing in his classic fashion, right?
Oh, so
how many people are cleaning their lines every 2 weeks?
I've definitely had some.
Oh, me.
Not many. Me. I can tell you
I've definitely had some bad Fat Tugs, and it's not because of the beer.
No.
I mean,
absolutely.
Trying to come at this is we've all had tons of Fat Tug, but trying to come at this just from a straight up.
Usually I'm not thinking about it, though.
Am I thinking about? I'm trying to taste it, and it's still a pretty good IPA.
It's a solid. Oh, yeah. It's a solid beer.
It's got definitely more malts than a lot of San Diego IPAs or anything like that.
You know what? I totally agree with you there.
Yeah.
You know, San Diego, we were there last year, and it's still, last year is very recent.
Yeah.
It is absolutely still in that sort of first wave of, hey, hops, really? Man, hops, really? Let's do it.
Yeah. Wow.
Can you imagine how much Driftwood makes of Fat Tug?
They make a lot of it. I think that's probably the majority of their, their production.
We've all been there, right, to that facility? Yeah. We've all been there in some
way. It's a big place.
Yeah, and the fact that they have like a hop cannon is this...
Well, that just makes me have you seen their new delivery truck?
No.
They have a tanker truck, and they've wrapped it to look like a Fat Tug can.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's amazing.
That is phenomenal.
Love it.
I think, Julie got her, license so she could drive it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
She got her air brakes.
Oh.
Yeah. So she's brewer and truck driver there.
Julie
can do that.
Lavoie. Lavoie. Oh, sorry.
French.
I do the English.
Yeah, it's French.
Version.
Okay, Don Cherry.
Well, Boyer.
Boyer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Actually, you must get that a lot. Uh-huh. I actually had never occurred to me.
Yes, he could call
Mr. Boyer.
Boyer is the proper pronunciation because it's French. But at the end of the day, we call it Boyer because we're loyalists.
I see. All right. Well, now we're the Pacific loyalist chat with the.
Yeah. I think this is classic. This is all back. We've all had great memories of this particular beer.
Lots of piss, lots of resin.
Yeah.
It's bitter. It's not massively bitter.
It's got the malt balance there, though. It's not super sweet. There's a little bit of a sweet malt component there to balance it out. Well, it's decent beer.
Yeah.
I would challenge anybody out there who's been avoiding Fat Tug and been like,
why would you avoid it?
I know plenty of people.
I want to answer that.
Well, I just want to say, you know, go back to it and don't think about, oh, it's Fat Tug. Just, you know, sit down with it and think about it for a bit.
Sit down on a hot patio and get nice and thirsty and sweaty. Living and then
this deserves a fair shake. I'm just saying.
Absolutely.
Steve's on point.
Yeah. The Tug deserves a fair shake.
Yeah.
Locked into that.
I don't know what you guys are laughing about. I don't understand. But I'll tell you what.
We'll explain it after the podcast.
On the, you know, on the
are we at 14A yet?
On the note about, you know, avoiding Fat Tug, the answer to that was because there's so much other beer now, right?
You nailed it.
And that's the thing is that we're spoiled for choice.
Yeah.
And so
definitely
that's what we do. Craft beer nerds are like kids in candy shop. And if you have lots of candy, we're not going to go back to the one we already had.
Oh, there's a new beer. Oh, but there's hot tamales. What are you talking about?
it's too bad for those beers that then, let's face it, the craft beer nerds and the blogosphere. Then starts to put down the stuff that they formerly loved. And,
that sort of comes full circle to why we're tasting these beers again, because they were falling through the cracks and kind of being forgotten about, right? And we need to bring this back to the forefront because it's a damn good style.
This podcast alone will double the sales of Fat Tug over
Let's hope so. Let's hope so.
I don't know if Driftwood really wants that, because to go to that other point about how much Fat Tug they can possibly make, let's face it, you know, to Jason's point, when they're trying to keep up with the demand that this thing generated and with the great sales team and all that, they're basically riding the same kind of success Apple had to ride with the iPhone. And how fast can we make these iPhones? Because you know what? We're selling more than we thought.
Right.
And
are you advocating contract brewing?
And to the defense...
To Samsung.
Yeah, exactly.
When we mention about Driftwood and Fat Tug, they are not a one-trick pony brewer.
No. They've got lots of good...
Oh, wow. That is so...
I don't want any listeners that are new to this chat to think, say...
They've got lots of good beers.
You nailed it. So I want to make sure that's abundantly apparent.
I'd like to see their tasting room expanded just a little bit.
You mean
into a tasting room?
Well, they have a tasting room.
No, they have a growler filling station.
It only fits about six people.
They have the original meaning of tasting.
Yeah.
Not lounge, just taste.
Yeah. I think they need to work
on
that.
You can taste it. Don't stick around.
I think train means drink, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Actually, I thought it meant we were at a Mariners baseball game in Seattle.
Could be.
Wow.
All right. Well, I guess we're moving on to... Whoa, Dave, did you beat me?
Oops.
No, I'm hiding my beer.
I had such high hopes for you, Dave.
Sorry, I'm still at the children's table.
We're all at the children's table, it seems.
Thank you.
All right, I will grab the last of the tasting.
The last of the tasting will be the classic and the oldest of these batches here, the Red Racer.
Yeah.
It's been around since when?
Well, this beer has been around since around 2007.
2007, eh?
So,
wow.
I'm doing math in my head. How old was it?
So it's in its 11th year or something like that. And I think they may have adjusted the recipe slightly when they went into the production brewery. It did change slightly, but it's been pretty consistent since. The one thing I always know about this beer is it's going to be bitter. There's, yes. The bitterness almost overrides the aroma in some cases.
I will freely admit, there have been many times, even long after I got over, and we talked about it earlier, about that thing I think maybe Steve mentioned about kind of acclimating to hops.
Yeah.
Everybody has to learn to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not born. Animals don't eat bitter things.
Bitter
generally.
Typically means don't eat this. It's poisonous.
Yeah. So we're not born ready to crush, you know, Red Racer IPA.
Right.
But once we all kind of got over things like bitter and things that are hard to drink, like James Flanders. So then eventually, yeah.
Wow.
Sorry, memory there. And you at some point, you acclimate to it. But even after that, I never thought of Red Racer as just a crushable beer. It was never crushable for me.
No.
Never got to that point. They also, and I'll tell you folks for the little historic value, Red Racer won a lot of, let's say their awards from Camera, specifically Camera Vancouver, which is a chapter of the Campaign for Real Ale British Columbia, which is a beer advocacy and education and enthusiast group.
Chapter or branch?
Sorry, I say chapter. I'm never going to say branch. Anyway, so...
I've won awards from them, too. Yeah.
Not for brewing, Mike, but anyway.
Right. <Whatever. laughs> Still got an award, damn it.
So there was a time when year after year after year, Central City would win for IPA.
Sure.
And it was just a matter of, are they winning for the basic Red Racer, or are they winning for, well, it became called Red Racer, or are they winning for the Imperial IPA? Mm. That was the question.
Damn,
was there another name for the Red Racer IPA back then? Because I know, like, there was the Springboard Lager back in
I
the day.
That too,
yeah.
Yeah,
they had a
remember.
Whole line of them.
It was like Raleigh's Wheat or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
Red Racer.
With the Lumberjack.
Yeah.
And there was
I think the Red Racer might have actually been the Pale Ale, if I remember correctly.
Well, I don't even think any of like Red Racer, Red Betty all came out of having to have distinctive names for their stuff being sold outside of the brew pub because the laws were so stupid at the time.
Well, Red Betty is the American
well,
version
no,
of Red Racer.
Red Betty is the logo. And it's Red Racer.
But if you buy that can in the States, it says Red Betty, not Red Racer.
Yeah, because of Racer 5, Bear Republic.
That's Racer 5 fuckers, yeah.
seems like Mike is familiar with that.
Boycott Bear Republic. Do not buy their swill.
Just to get this out of here, Red Racer used to put out a copper bock. They stopped a long time ago. Bring it back!
Yeah, we've got some Surrey people
Speaking
in the
of
house,
which,
folks.
Look at the
Former
color on
Surreys
this. So
for
this
a
thing's,
of us.
This thing's
hey,
talk about the appearance
you don't,
here. This
you
thing
don't
is
get
super clear.
Leaving Surrey doesn't mean that you get the Surreys out of
it. I got the Surrey out of this boy.
No, you can take the boy out of the Surrey. You can't take Surrey out of the boy.
So this looks to me like one of the darkest examples we've had
agree,
tonight.
But the clarity is also on point.
This is like a deep orange, dark amber.
Kind of a toasted bread crust
I like
rust.
Dark amber.
And I use rust as a color descriptor, not as to think it's going to taste like rust. But it looks like that orange rust color, right?
Yeah definitely.
Some people get put off by some descriptors, right? Because they impart their own bias. Oh, it's going to taste like rust? No, slow down. It's just a color.
I get a lot of citrus off the aroma here.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, that takes me back.
I was going to say the same thing. You beat me to it, Steve.
Well, the thing for me is I still buy Red Racer, so now I've got a different and educational point, folks, for those of you that like to economize.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Red Racer's special place in the pantheon of beers that
packaging.
Are good, but economical because they come in 500 milliliter cans.
Only.
I would.
Yeah. No 12 ounce cans.
You can keep going and I'm going to add something. Yeah.
Okay. So what they did is they bought a European system for canning and ended up with the big old half liter cans.
Perfect.
Which is great. And, you know, the fact that you're getting this extra 5% beer over, say, 473, well, okay, it's not exactly 5. And then the part that really makes it interesting in terms of your shopping needs is that then they had economies of scale from this machine they had bought, or, well, I call it a machine. It's probably a giant system. And so they then dropped the price of the beers. They kept the same price as they were charging for the little 341 milliliter cans.
355 or whatever.
So this is back 2 years ago. They made they actually had a media scrum. They had a press gathering, and they said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to upsize by about 50% off of, you know, let's say the Main Street can that is in front of us, and you're getting 50% more beer for essentially the same price.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you buy a 12 pack of these, you'll get them for as low as $19.99, which is, we're talking about 3 liters of beer for $20, and there isn't any other way to get beer. And I'm not talking craft beer.
A six pack is 3 liters.
So, 6 liters. Thank you, Warren. Yeah. Thank you, Warren. Because, yes.
Instead of 4 liters from a normal dozen.
So you're getting, in when they did it at the six pack, you would get for $9.99, and this you won't find as often, but you would get 3 liters for $9.99. Thanks, Warren.
It's a bargain.
And then double that, you get 6 liters for $20. You can't actually buy, whether you're using a growler, whether you're buying in a 40-pack Budweiser, there isn't a way to buy beer more economically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it works out to the milliliter cheaper than buying Wildcat.
It's amazing. Yeah.
So damn. I would highly recommend don't buy the Wildcat.
No, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Don't buy Wildcat anyway.
Well, unless you want to wake up naked in a jail cell.
Naked like fox. The naked fox?
Naked fox.
Naked Wildcat.
Oh, there we go. The other
naked
animal.
Naked Wildcat.
Well, I was going to say, at BC Liquor Store, the Reign of Hops pack, which is their IPA, their Super Solar, whatever they're calling it now, their Pale Ale, and their ISA.
Galaxy one, yeah.
Yeah. 500 milliliter cans, 12 of them, for the same price as 12 small bottles of Budweiser.
Like, how can you go wrong?
Like, how can you go wrong? It's a no-brainer. Swill,
it's a no-brainer. Pick up the craft.
It's bigger.
It's delicious. Yeah.
Which just amazing? Blows me away. Or Rain of Hops or whatever.
That sounds like a great death metal song.
Like, you know, just change up Rain of Blood from Slayer.
The most pretentious metal album ever.
The one thing about this beer is, even though it's darker in color.
As we quickly
in
drift
color,
into metal.
Even though this beer is darker in color, I'm not getting the sweetness that a couple of the other ones had. No. It's a little more attenuated.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still got that malty, it's more of a Shreddies kind of cereal kind of flavor I'm getting from the malt side. And the hops are not as distinguishable. They're not necessarily floral or citrusy or whatever. It's more just a bitterness.
Yeah, there's definitely, it's still got lots of that like resiny thing going on. Mm-hmm. And there's still the pith in there. But yeah, no, it's definitely a little more muddled.
I think with this one, I look at it as a 1+1=3. Item because all the hops are coming together and you can't pull them out because they're all so intertwined.
Right.
Both through nose and aroma. Like I've been taking, you know, small sniffs each time before I sip and I'm getting
a little bit
different.
It's hard to pick out any individual.
You nailed it. You'll get individual components as you, the more you consume this beverage.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
So
it's got a complexity to it that it allows you to work through it. But it's still not challenging or overpowering. This doesn't finish as nearly as bitter as the Fat Tug did, even though it's the same IBU.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, and you're absolutely going to have to email a link to Gary, although he does actually have email, believe it or not. Social media.
I think he's on his way to Asia in a couple of weeks.
Social media, not so much. But you're going to have to alert him that he needs to listen to this episode.
No, he doesn't.
If only to hear the way that he was. But, you know, I am sure he would have enjoyed being here for this because he got a good roasting, not only during his own beer, but during the competition's beer, too.
Maybe that's what we should do, you know. One of these days we'll have
bring in the brewers and get roast.
Brewers roast. Ruthless.
Oh,
but no! Well, don't roast the beer, though. Don't roast the beer.
We'll have to get BC beer memes, and we'll have to get beer poodle.
Mike,
oh man!
Remember we talked about domain names? Run out there tonight, Brewers Roast. It's you can have Port Moody as your first. Yes. Invite all four. It, Brewers Roast.
Oh wow! I like that. Yeah. That's a good tie-in.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah. We're nothing if not crafty.
Yeah.
At
yeah.
Pacific Beer Chat.
Oh yeah.
I
all right,
feel
well,
crafty.
So crafty.
Anyways,
we've had some beer now. Fuck, we're singing.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy, the next episode's gonna be fantastic.
Yeah, I was just at Central City just this past week, and I
which one?
At the
production?
Yeah, the production facility, and I walk in, and there's Gary in kind of the teacher room, trying to hide around the corner.
Yeah, that sounds like him
having lunch, and I go, brewers don't get lunch. What's up with that? Like, you know, brewers don't eat.
He doesn't brew much anymore. I think Zach's doing most of the brewing.
Yeah, so
he's an owner.
He laughed, and long and the short is, you know, reconnected with Zach. It's always good to see him work his magic in the facility. And I hadn't seen the facility expand since about 4 years ago.
Oh wow!
So he showed.
They got a few more tanks in there.
A few. Yeah. Wow. So I'm not
building a second building now.
Yeah, the
there's
warehouse.
Other things going on. I'm not sure if I'm at liberty to say, but you've
it's
gotta...
no secret. They're building a warehouse that's going to be fully automated, and it's going to be stocked by robots that'll rip your head off and all that bullshit.
Actually, it was secret.
It wasn't that.
It was actually secret until now.
So, yeah. But anyway, Gary's such a great guy, and just talking about components. Yeah. And
Gary's amazing.
Yeah, and he's
When I started homebrewing, I used to buy ingredients from Gary when he worked at Sailor Hagar's.
Yeah,
In North Van.
Yeah, I've known him a while. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
And he's got a legacy.
And down to earth.
And that's, I think that what you said earlier, Warren, is when the brewer puts in a lot of positive energy into
the
product.
He loves what
he's
doing. He cares about
Zach's
the
same
product.
Way.
Yeah.
Zach's amazing.
Even though they're working on huge, huge systems, like he's going out there, he's doing the sampling, he's making sure everything's good. All these brewers are doing hands-on stuff.
Yeah, they're not going through the motions.
No.
No, yeah.
So I think that even if... the beer that they make doesn't quite connect with you, you have to kind of look at what the story they're trying to tell.
Absolutely.
So I think that's just a bit of a takeaway. If you look at all the variations of West Coast IPA that we've had today, it's going to be interesting of what their iterations or what their methodology was behind it. What was their interpretation of West Coast?
Yeah.
What influenced them? What beers influenced them to make?
Well, I got a funny feeling that this Red Racer IPA was something that evolved from what he was doing at Sailor Hagar's back in the day, right? So it would have been the Eye of the Tiger or whatever the heck. The Bengal.
Yes.
Right? The Bengal IPA?
Yes. He had Bengal and James had Hurricane.
Right. That was well before my time in craft beer.
and Bill Herdman was the other cat.
Yeah, well, because, when he had Tall Ship going.
Because according to him, he created West Coast IPA
and
or whatever.
He was way ahead of his time.
Yeah, I know.
Tall Ship IPA was amazing. Well, the Tall Ship, what was it called? Shipwreck or something?
Yeah.
Shipwreck IPA? I think you might be right.
I haven't seen that guy in a long time.
Amazing beer. But it didn't last long because it was way before people could deal with it.
Yeah.
I remember. The legend.
Yeah. Anyways, overall, I think all of these were decent examples of the style. But I think the older ones are a little more classic, a little more representative.
Yeah.
The newer ones we had were more of a hybrid sort of with a newer influence, except maybe for the Lightheart.
Lightheart's the closest to the traditional West Coast. It's still not there, but...
Yeah.
But it's still more of a hybrid, but it's definitely the closest out of the newer ones, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So at the end of the day, you couldn't go wrong with any of these. I'm sorry.
No.
It depends on what you're looking for.
All right.
Do we want to go around here then and pick our favorites of the tasting panel here? So, Warren, why don't you start?
I really liked the 33 Acres of Nirvana just because it was a little bit different, had that little tropical thing going on, but it was just so delightful, a really nice beer to drink. But I also enjoyed some of the other ones. I wouldn't hesitate to, have a glass of Lightheart or even a Fat Tug or a Red Racer. I mean, Red Racer I'll still buy occasionally when I'm at the beer store.
Yeah.
If I don't see anything else on the shelf that interests me, that's the default, right?
Especially if you're broke.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
$20, you got a 12 case of tall cans.
Yeah. You're absolutely right.
Instead of
Steve?
Four pack.
I agree. You can't go wrong with any of these. These were all really good beers. They're all pretty representative of the style, depending on kind of where you're at in your journey with West Coast IPAs. I'm going to go with you. 33 Acres of Nirvana was fantastic. I really enjoyed sort of sitting through all the little notes that it gave you.
Come as you are, right?
So, I think for me, the most interesting one, actually, I would also vote for 33 because of the fact that essentially it was a to me, it was highly deliberate, a kind of a variation on what we were expecting. But just in terms of what I would probably crush, I would actually go back to the Parkside because that's the one that, and the funny thing about that is it's not actually within parameters of what we were talking about when we were talking about West Coast IPA. It is highly crushable, and you know what, folks? That represents exactly why the other styles have become dominant in the last few years.
Yeah.
I like 33 Acres. I'm not just trying to follow everybody else, but I was looking at the bottle and I go, it's only 330 mil, and I have my sad face on.
Yeah.
And why is there not more of this delicious liquid in a bigger container? Like, I feel wah.
It leaves you wanting more.
Yeah. So that's kind of really where everything is. Not just like, oh, you're just a big lush. I remember having my sample.
Not
and
just
going,
that.
Not just that.
That was really good. Going, I need more.
Dang it. Yeah. So that's kind of where it was. If I'm on a basis kind of level with all, looking at all the components we've talked about and all the complexities, but right down to it, it's just raw drinkability and what's sticking out of my head right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did like that one a lot, but I think I'm going to go with Lightheart because it's... It's a little bit new school. It's a little bit old school. It's a West Coast IPA, but it's got something a little bit different going on.
English.
But if you're just
straddling a bit of both.
Straddling a bit of both. But, I mean, if you're really going to go down to it, the only two really, really true West Coast IPAs in this are Fat Tug and they're the Red Racer IPA.
Yeah. Classics. So,
I mean, if I want to be truthful about it and we're doing a West Coast IPA panel, it really has to be one of those two for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's not the one I'm going to choose, but it's got to be one of those two.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
So.
You're right.
Let's just say that I'm picking Lightheart, you're all picking Nirvana, but really when it comes down to it, I think West Coast IPA, it's Fat Tug or it's Red Racer.
Yeah.
Locally.
That's fair.
Totally. You can't go wrong.
And I'm not even saying just this panel in general. If you're looking back at the history of BC beer, it's probably one of those two beers. You look at all the old awards and... Was those damn two beers fighting all the time?
I think, as a throw out to both, take this idea, both Driftwood and Red Racer, I'd be interested to go, what is your most favorite memory of, say, Fat Tug or Red Racer IPA? Run a contest, and then whoever has the most, just chooses the most, they get a, give them a gift.
Yeah, right? That'd be cool.
Damn, that's going to be quite the trip down memory lane.
Wouldn't that be amazing, though?
Because
people are going to go back to that and go, oh, well, I haven't had Fat Tug in X years, or I haven't had Red Racer IPA in Y years, so why not? It gives the kind of an opportunity for people to revisit kind of their BC craft beer heritage.
Yeah, for sure. I absolutely love the idea. I'm just imagining the submissions going, oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh,
stir up all those old emotions.
Yep.
Head down to the liquor store and pick some up.
Yep. All righty. Sure. Well, why don't we go back to Dave? Why don't you give a shout out to the magazine and to Legacy Liquor Store again before we close this episode out?
Well, thank you very much, Mike, as usual, for hosting. Absolutely enjoyed our ability to have live in your mouth experience.
Oh, you had to end on that note?
Wow.
No, hey, come on, guys. I mean, there's been enough talk about anyway.
Tugs.
Yeah. I wasn't going to give it the dignity of saying it again.
Damn naked foxes.
I didn't want to be a jerk.
Yeah.
There we go. Somebody got it. So
damn humans.
So, oh, we're gonna go around the horn.
Yeah.
With the fox, I still have my suspicion about what a naked fox really is. But
just have a
anyway.
Heart. Just have a heart.
So, I would like to reiterate. Thank you very much, Pacific Beer Chat. Yes. For hosting the What's Brewing tasting panel follow-up episode.
For sure.
You will find the tasting panel in every issue of What's Brewing right in the middle of the magazine. This issue comes out by the time you're listening to this. September runs through the end of November. In stores, and by stores we mean tasting rooms around BC. There's about 50 of them. Look it up. You can get a physically printed hard copy, but you don't even have to do that because you can read it in the comfort of your bathroom, actually.
For free.
Yeah.
And on your tablet, your smartphone, or fridge. And so if you'd like to... smart fridge, okay.
Yeah,
not the fridge you guys have. Yeah. So
yeah. Stupid fridge.
I can print it off and put it on the front with a magnet.
Actually, yes. Right next to all the kids' drawings, folks.
Yeah.
Put the tasting panels for the education of those youngsters.
Yeah.
So... if you'd like to read the reviews in What's Brewing, go to www.whatsbrewing.ca. Thank you very much, Legacy Liquor Store. Shout out to Chris, Maddie, and the staff there. Thank you, Lundy, for organizing. We appreciate everything that you guys do.
You're awesome, Lundy.
Woo. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you can also get the magazine in hard copy by mail if you sign
yes,
up ahead
absolutely.
Of time, right?
Subscribe at whatsbrewing.ca/subscribe.
Yes.
And subscribe to this podcast in a way that Mike,
Pacific
I'm sure,
Beer
will
Chat.
Advise you.
Yeah, any of your favorite podcatchers, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, iTunes.
Stitcher.
Whatever it is, at Pacific Beer Chat. And you can also email us at feedback@PacificBeerChat if you've forgotten how to get a hold of Dave at What's Brewing, and I can steer you there, too.
Absolutely.
All right, so as we close this out, we'd like to shout out to all our Patreon supporters.
Mm-hmm.
They help us...
Liz!
Yeah, they help us upgrade our equipment and help paying our hosting for the podcast. So shout out to Liz from Hop Power.
Woo!
Indie Beer Show, both from San Diego, California, and then Steve across the table there.
Hi. Yeah, Steve.
Cheers!
Thanks, Steve.
So you can go to patreon.com/PacificBeerChat. Thanks for listening.
Ciao. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to Pacific Beer Chat. We can be found on all podcast apps as well as at PacificBeerChat.com. If you find a podcast app we are missing on, let us know and we'll endeavor to fix that. Leave us a review on iTunes as it helps expose more people to the show. You can email us at feedback@PacificBeerChat.com. We can be found on all major social media apps at Pacific Beer Chat. Logo design was by Tim, the craft beer tourist. Audio editing done by Cam, known as Cam on Tap on Twitter. To play us out, here is a clip of the song Lothian by the band Conundrum, performed by Kevin Ems. Find them at conundrum-music.bandcamp.com. The song that plays us out is part of our intro.